Welcome back to the wide world of Wargaming. Again, this is Alex, and with me today will be John and Jeremy. Garrett and Matthew are out for today's episode, but we do have a great guest today. He's from the Independent Characters and the Lord and Heroes podcast. We have Adon with us tonight. Adon, what's on your workbench?
What's on my workbench? Well, right now I'm recording from my office since my regular computer's in a different state. So on my workbench is a cup of coffee. And the rest of my workbench is in pieces in a new game room in a different state. So that's kind of where I'm stuck at the moment.
Have you already started putting that new game room together over there?
Well, I stacked up all the boxes and it filled up the entire room. So apparently moving out of a house that had 20 years worth of stuff in it has a bit of an impact on a place that has two less bedrooms. So in the old house, I had an entire bedroom that was just my hobby room. And in this newer place, which is about half the size, I have twice as much stuff and half the size, and so it's a little cramped.
Oh wow, that sounds actually pretty rough, man. Wow, how are you going to deal with that?
Well, I'm doing the Game Castle flea market on June 8th. I plan to sell off a bunch of stuff there, and whatever doesn't get sold, I'm going to dump in a random dumpster on the way down Highway 5 towards Arizona. You think I'm kidding? I've done that before, so it may happen again.
Take a recording of that when you throw out some Vermin Lords.
Yeah, well, I would never actually touch Dirty Skaven, so that'll never happen.
Wow.
Ooh. I throw a little shade in the first couple minutes there. What the hell?
That's fair.
Okay. John, what's on your workbench tonight?
Sure. So, rolling into a Monday, you know, I had a great weekend, and I tell you guys, after last week's coconut wine debacle, my stomach was not feeling so good for a few days after that, as was the wife. So this week, I'm enjoying an Izzy sparkling clementine sparkling water. You heard me pop it open. I wish Mr. Garrett was here, as this is his normal favorite beverage. Let's see if it's any good. Oh man, there's
does it taste like disappointment?
Yeah, I don't know what the hell. There's something missing, a kind of a bite that I'm used to at the back end of most beverages I drink. So I don't know, we'll see how it goes. Maybe I'll add a little something to it.
Yeah, go grab some whiskey and drop it in, you'll be fine.
I think that'll be perfect. Other than that, you know, I actually played a whole lot of games this week. I actually got two games in against Michael Schwartz's new Hedonites of Slaanesh. Ooh, yeah, wow. So first, my first game against him, I just didn't know what to expect. Of course, after the last podcast, I was really afraid of some of the mechanics. They have all that go last mechanics and what have you. So I brought a pretty basic list. I brought a Warp Seer, a Vermin Lord Warp Seer, of course. I gave him the Suspicious Stone, but I also gave him the command ability that lets him on a 5+ pass damage off to adjacent units. So I figured I'd make him super unkillable. I added in a Plague Furnace and then 240 Plague Monks.
What?
Yeah, it was great. Warp Lightning Vortex and a Bell of Doom. What can I say? Michael, he has a big, nasty Slaanesh list with a Keeper of Secrets. He's got two Chariots. He's got two of the Harpers, the Mirror, the new terrain piece. The Mirror is the Twins, or I forget the exact name of that new model, but it looks like a big one. That's it.
So what do you think of that, the Harpist?
So I tell you, the whole army, okay, each one of those characters has an ability to pick an enemy unit, and then on a 4+, that unit is going to swing last in the next combat phase. Yikes. And if all of that fails, then the Mirror has one where it's a 6-inch bubble and everybody swings last. So Whoa. Pretty nasty with the go last mechanics. Other than that, the Harp doesn't seem to be super strong in combat, at least not when I charge a bunch of monks into it. Something to watch out for, though, is that Mirror, the Twins, does have a 2+ invulnerable save. Whoa. Or a 2+ save against mortal wounds, I should say.
Yeah.
So yep. pretty hard to take it down. But then on the other hand, you just go in with normal attacks.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's Mike's list. I think I mentioned he has 60, two blocks of 30, demonettes in there. And he, of course, has the big Keeper of Secrets in his list, too. So he wasn't sure what to do with all those rats on the table. He saw that I was definitely trying to deny his summoning and all of that. He killed about 110 rats, and I almost tabled him. And then he summoned back pretty much everything that I killed. Ooh. It was pretty
brutal. That's nice. That's nice.
Yeah. Wasn't that nice? Yeah. Yeah. And so... Yeah. After that, I killed that stuff again, and we called it. In the end, he really wasn't able to score any points off of me. We played the first mission of the BAO, which was shifting priorities. So all three objectives on the center line, and I basically covered the entire center field. But really, that was just me wanting to get a feel for the Hedonites. And so the next day, Mike said, "Hey, John, I want to play again. I want to play with my list. But you know what? I don't want to play against a plague of rats. What else do you got that I can practice against?" I said, you know, fair enough. So I brought my Ideneth Deepkin.
Oh, nice.
And this time I brought a list of 60 Thralls, Volturnos, 10 Reavers, so 9 Morasar Guard, 2 Soul Scryers, and took Briamthar.
So you swarmed him with fish instead of rats.
I swarmed him with fish with instead of rats. And really this time I had spent the night, because this is really just 2 days later, I had really spent some time thinking about tactics that I could use to deny the go first technique. And I'd really put a lot of those into practice in this particular game. And I'll tell you, one of the ones that worked out real well for me was I charged a unit, and that unit I multi-charged and made sure that at least 2 of the units were only in range of 1 go last mechanic. So at least 1 of the 2 units was going to get to swing normally. And then I took just 1 model and strung it way out to where it was 2.9 inches away from the far tail of a group of demonettes, to where, again, if he wanted to activate first, he would maybe get in to swing 2 or 3 of them. And I kind of tied them up. So that worked pretty well for me. And basically he looked at that and he goes, "Oh, so my go last mechanic doesn't do me any good here." I go, "Yep, you screw me once. And now I've learned the lesson on that one." So it's pretty frightening to play against. But I'm telling you, once you've experienced it a couple times, there are ways around it for sure. That said, he tabled me top of 3. So
that's what you deserve after that Skaven army. Jesus.
It is what I deserve. What do you deserve this week, Jeremy? Tell me.
Well, not as exciting as this weekend for John, but mostly I decided to do something dumb in my life. I bought a Gitz army, and then I've been doing nothing but this weekend, but developing like a Gitz list. I think could be like somewhat mid tier, but I don't think I know at Bobo Gitz was like the most popular army, and there was some that made pretty high, but I just can't see that list would like that army function without like something like by like a 10-15% point drop in like most of their basic units. I just don't see it outside of that. And I feel like every Gitz list just devolves into a magic dominating army, which feels very not fun for your opponents or not fun for you either. But yeah.
Now, did you buy that brand new, or did you pick up something that was already built?
I picked up like a Loon Curse box, which is like an awesome like set of like the new Cave Squid, like Loon box on Giant Cave Squid. Cool model. I loved assembling the Mangler Squid. I thought that was an awesome model too. The nice advantage of making these Gitz is that apparently my wife wants to paint some of them. So that will be going far, because she thinks they look hilariously stupid looking, which that's kind of the point.
Oh, wow. I can't wait to see what she does, too. She's so talented. That'd be awesome.
Oh, yeah. She'll just paint them about like 3 colors, and then she'll say, "I'm done." And, and then let me finish it up.
Oh, is that how it is?
Yeah, it is.
So here's the little secret that I found with getting my wife to paint stuff. I do the base coats and let her do the little finishing touches and stuff.
Yeah, I was considering that with the airbrush. Now that I actually have an airbrush set up and everything, just get them all ready. I'm just really looking forward to your event this weekend, Johnny O, the Barry Open is going to be exciting.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun. So much fun.
Are you going to be there, Adam?
No, I'm not. I'm going to be this weekend is the normal commencement weekend for the college that I work at. So I've missed Kublai Khan the last 7 years. I used to go every single year and play a whole bunch of stuff. And this job has really just totally destroyed that for me. So I'm kind of glad that I'm retiring from this job in 2 weeks so they can't destroy Kublai for me anymore. So.
Oh, nice. That'll be kind of a regular trek for you back to the Bay Area then.
Yeah, I kind of hope so. I mean, that's Kublai Khan is kind of where all of my kind of organized gaming stuff really blossomed. And so that it'll be really nice to kind of get back to my roots on that. And I used to help Endgame and Zombiesmith set their booths up. I used to help them with some other stuff they were doing there, and then also play in a bunch of events and like a whole bunch of different game systems. And so it'll be nice to get back to Kublai.
I'm gonna have a weird like nostalgic nerd moment because I used to live in the Bay Area. Did you ever play at a store called Neutral Ground?
Yes.
Oh my god. Okay. So maybe we played each other when I was younger then at some
point. Oh, I doubt it.
Oh, that's sorry, just a little bit of nostalgia there.
What did you play at Neutral Ground when you were there?
I mostly played Warhammer 40K back then, and I played like third edition Black Templar and then followed by Tau when they came out.
Yeah, Neutral Ground, I was playing Clicks Games and the Game of Thrones CCG back when it was a collectible card game.
Oh, yeah. Man, I was sad when I came back for the last BO or two BOs ago and I saw that store was like demolished.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think we lost Alex.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't have much on my workbench, just some good old water, still trying not to drink too much during the work week. You know, got busy man, got busy things to do. Haven't been able to play a game since you stomped me with your Daughters of Cain during that French Revolution live stream. So, you know, not much to say there, but, you know, really just preparing myself for Bay Area Open. That's not bitterness. We'll get to that in a moment. Not necessarily
they did a live stream of the French Revolution. I didn't know they had that technology back then.
You'd be surprised.
Robespierre was very advanced.
Now, you know, what I have been doing is I've just been doing some preparation and finalizing a potential second list and really just getting my cogs painted up so that they fit my theme rather than having to borrow someone else's cogs like local William or Jeremy's cogs, for instance. So, you know, just getting that in line and preparing for what might be ahead with Games Workshop and Age of Sigmar 2. Now, you know, Adon, you are, you know, very well known amongst many individuals in the wargaming community. You know, you primarily came from 40K. Can you tell me a little bit about how your transition was from 40K to Age of Sigmar? You know, did you play Warhammer Fantasy at all? And if so, or if not, you know, what caught your eye to Age of Sigmar?
Yeah, actually, I started with Games Workshop stuff after playing Clicks Games and started with Warhammer 40K because my son bought the Battle for McCrag box. And he needed an opponent, so I started with that. And then I jumped pretty quickly also into fantasy because Bretonians were my jam. And in fact, pretty early on in the hobby, my wife actually bought the Green Knight and painted it for me as a Christmas gift. And it was really kind of demoralizing because the first time she painted a miniature was better than anything I had done to that point at all. So that was great. I had a huge Bretonian army. And I played in the there was a 2-day GT that used to be run by the Leadership 2 group guys called Quake City Rumble. Mm-hmm. And I played that pretty much every year. I played Bretonians, and then I went from Bretonians to High Elves. Played the High Elves. It was a Sea Guard themed list. And then I went from that to 1 year I played an Orcs list. I'm sorry, Goblins. It was all Night Goblins. And regular goblins. There was no orcs in the list, and every unit was random. I had maximum fanatics. I had 27 fanatics in that list. And so my compulsory moves phase was basically the exchange for my magic phase. And I won exactly half my games, which is what you would expect from a totally random army. So that was fun. And then I went from that to a all mounted Warriors of Chaos list. It was all mounted Marauders and mounted Knights. Mm-hmm. And
Cool.
it was, you know, and then the general was mounted on a monster, the big flying manticore. So it was a cool army. It, you know, didn't do great, but it was a fun army. And when they blew up the old world, I was one of those nerd ragers who was like, I'm never playing Sigmar, because I was really pissed that they killed my world of models. And they've already said they're not going to bring back Bretonnian, so that just rubs salt in the wound. So I actually
didn't... I mean, they did.
Huh?
Come on. They brought back Bretonnians.
No.
A little bit.
How? Where? There's no
Bretonnian. First shooter core.
I knew someone was going to say that. Anyway, moving along. So I was one of those folks who was like, I am not playing this game. And I did not play Age of Sigmar at all in first edition.
Well, I'm super surprised to hear that. Like that runs totally counter to what I know about you and everything I've ever encountered with you, Adon, to hear you being one of the guys taking the lighter fluid to his elf army as it
No, I didn't do that. No, I mean, I didn't do that. I kept all my models because I was like, because pretty much most of my armies didn't have a port over in the new system. High elves did not. Bretonnians did not. The mounted chaos guys at first did not. So I was like, the only thing I could play was the goblins, and I was already going to sell that army because I did that as kind of like a one-off joke. So I didn't even have a really good army to play in Sigmar, and I was like, I don't want to, you know, cobble together, you know, Free Peoples this and Sky Agent that, and it just didn't feel right. And I was pretty heavy into 40K at that point, and the Leadership 2 guys all split up, and they were playing Malifaux and Infinity and all kinds of other stuff. So I focused primarily on doing 40K at that point. And as y'all know, I, you know, kind of got deep into this podcast on 40K that I do occasionally, and then running events at the local store. And then,
I mean, that's like how I really kind of like that, not so much even from the podcast. It's like, I knew you as a guy who ran events before I started hearing about you on the podcast.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, yeah. I mean, it's just one of those things, you know, kind of when I came into the podcast too, perhaps.
Right.
But, so, I mean, as far as I know, you were like the major guy running most or all the events up there at Endgame, which was like one of the major stores in the Bay Area, right?
Yeah. I got involved with running events. A buddy of mine brought the 40K Fight Club, which was a Michigan-based club that had a couple other chapters, and we started a chapter there at Endgame. And then he had a kid for a while.
Hold on, real quick. Yeah. We're gonna have to do this in editing. I had a little bit of a connectivity issue on my end. I had to resolve. I unfortunately wasn't able to get like the last like 20 seconds of that.
Okay. Do you want me to start over with that telling of that story?
Yeah. Please. Thank you.
So yeah, I kind of got started with it. My buddy came and brought the 40K Fight Club to Endgame. It's a group out of Michigan that actually has some other chapters across the country. So the 40K Fight Club is how we started to run events. And then he had a kid and kind of dropped off the face of the planet. And I ended up kind of holding the keys to the club. And so I started running stuff, working with Mike Montessa there, was working at the store and was in charge of that mezzanine. And so we started just having fun with different kinds of narrative events and crazy rule events and very, very non-competitive events. I mean, Blooded Kittens Nick used to run 1504 tournaments there occasionally, but for the most part, it was our kind of narrative / kind of storytelling events. And they were a lot of fun, I thought. I mean, I had a good time, and we used to have some pretty epic turnouts for the size of that store. And we did some escalation leagues and those kinds of things. So it worked out really well. And then when 8th edition rolled around, I ran some demos of 8th edition, and we got a whole ton of people there at the store to play 8th ed. And we had a huge kind of bring in paint thing for, we did it with both 7th ed and 8th ed, and it worked out great. And then we were talking on the podcast about the fact that 8th Ed was very close to Age of Sigmar 2.0 coming out, and I really enjoyed the mechanics in 8th Ed. So I was like, okay, well, you know what? I'm going to try this Sigmar thing again. And I had somehow, I don't know how this happened, but I somehow amassed a huge number of Stormcast kind of. I think it's kind of, they're kind of like Space Marines. They just kind of end up in your bag.
Oh, yeah. Everybody that is involved with GW games ends up with Stormcast.
Yeah, Stormcast and Space Marines. Yeah. So, but then I started looking at the different armies and like, I really, really liked kind of the aesthetic and the play style and of the Daughters of Cain. Kind of as a port over of Dark Eldar, and kind of a similar vibe. And what really drew me to the Daughters of Cain was Marathi. I mean, I when I look at an army, I try and look at, you know, what are the models I really like. And I looked at in Age of Sigmar, the characters are really where the focus is. And there was two things. One, I was like terrified of trying to paint that Celestient Prime with all the swirlies. So I was looking at the other ones and Marathi was just like, oh man, this model is just amazing. So yeah, so that's how I ended up with Daughters of Cain with Age of Sigmar 2. And so we started running some escalation stuff with Age of Sigmar 2 at Endgame. And I am back into the fantasy / Sigmar fold to the extent that we even started a little podcast on it.
Very nice. You know, it's funny. I talked to a lot of people that have a similar story to at least what about Daughters of Cain drew you in. And that's that they see one particular model, one particular sculpt, and like, oh, man, I want to run that. I know for me, like, the, you know, the whole reason I run Skaven is because of that Thankwall and Bone Ripper model. I saw that model when it came out during the end times, had no intention of playing fantasy or Sigmar or any of that. But I bought the model. I was like, that's something I want to own.
Yeah.
A lot to be said for that. And of course, as you said, Marathi, what an amazing model. Now, have you finished building her and painting her up?
No, it scares me to death. I started, I built the tail and I was like, oh God. I did a bunch of the Blood Sisters to start with. And I was like, oh, how am I going to do this?
Oh boy.
Oh yeah.
Those models, the hair. So no one assembled.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one thing you can do, and it's something that a lot of people don't often do, but if you take your model and you just kind of, you put it together without glue, it's called dry fitting, and you can just kind of see how everything fits together
and
get a sense for the assembly.
I'm going to punch you right in the throat. Next time. I cannot believe you just did that to me.
Yeah. What are you talking about? I'm just talking about a basic.
No, you're right. It's actually recommended in the GW rules. There's in the GW assembly guide. There's actually an icon for it in their assembly guide.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's, believe me, I'm a person that came to this whole GW hobby with, you know, I had built some models as a kid and stuff, but nothing throughout my adult life. So I kind of came in fresh. I read those assembly guides. You know, it's like, yeah, fit them together, see how it works.
Yeah, wow. Well, you know, you also mentioned that you have a second podcast, a spinoff podcast, if you will, directly related to Age of Sigmar. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, so Lords and Heroes started out as a kind of a running joke on the independent characters back when fantasy was still alive, actually. Back when 40K still had independent characters, one of the things we talked about was that Justin and I played fantasy and Carl did not. And we started making jokes about, oh yeah, well, we're going to have our own podcast called Lords and Heroes. Cause Carl would not let us talk about fantasy on the ICs. So, you know, then 40K changed and there's no more ICs and then they blew up the old world and there's no more Lords and Heroes. And so it was kind of a joke. And when Sigmar 2.0 came out, I was chatting with Justin. I was like, you know what? Screw it. We're going to do this. Let's just do this. And we can kind of, it'll be kind of like our journey into Sigmar. And so the tagline is a gamer's journey through the mortal realms and the detours that happen along the way. Because, you know, I'm the showrunner and I have this really bad habit of playing every other game system that comes along, it seems. And so I keep getting detours. And so that's kind of the hook for the show. We record every show. It's monthly. We record every show in a bar
Oh, wow.
And that's a lot of fun. And we've gotten some interesting feedback from the people at the bar on it. It's all been very positive.
I tell you, it's actually, it adds a nice ambiance to when I'm listening to your show, just kind of the general chatter and everything in the background. I don't know, something about it makes it kind of feel as if I'm hanging out with you guys. Like I'm at the other end of the table, sipping a beer, listening to a couple of my buddies talk about stuff I like. It's kind of
cool. And I think that, you know, in a fantasy setting, where do the heroes all meet up? At the tavern, right? Before they go out on their journey. So it just kind of made sense. Plus, you know, Justin loves his drinking. And as I enjoy a good beer myself, I thought this would be a great way to do it. So he and I live about an hour and a half away from each other. So we meet at a bar that's halfway in between us and record there.
Okay, nice.
Can I?
That's nice. Yeah. Yeah. For the record, Justin lives right around the corner for me, but I swear I see you more down at this end of the town than I see you anywhere else.
Yeah. I tend to be a little too mobile for my own good sometimes.
I was going to ask briefly, Adam, so obviously the hobby, the narrative, the folklore, everything, you know, kind of brought you back into the game, a specific Age of Sigmar, but specifically what in 2.2 outside of that, like, you know, kept you around after giving it a shot again?
Well, as I said, I ended up basically falling into the mechanics because of 8th Ed 40K. Yeah. And it was very clear that the mechanics were very similar to Age of Sigmar. And, you know, and this is nothing new, and I've talked about this before, but fantasy, they used to use fantasy to test out mechanics and mechanisms that they ended up porting over into 40K. And they've been doing that since about, what, 4th or 5th edition of fantasy.
Yep. Yep.
And, you know, with magic phases and all this other kind of stuff. So,
Were the games similar in the past like that?
They did have some very similar mechanics, and the phases were similar, and there was a lot of similarities. Obviously, the rank and flank stuff was very different, but there were other things that were very similar. So they were able to kind of test stuff out and then port it over. And so when I went to 8th edition 40K, I thought, you know, I actually really like these mechanisms. I really like the way this flows. Maybe I should give this Sigmar thing a chance. And by that time, Daughters of Cain had their own battle tome, and a couple other buddies of mine were willing to try it out. And so it's like, okay, let's do this thing.
Perfect. Well, you know, I'm glad that you've gone headfirst into Age of Sigmar. And as you mentioned, some things have, you know, started off as jokes and really expanded and evolved from there. So, you know, it's great to see everything that you and your co-hosts and the independent characters as well have been able to do for the community at large. Now,
Alex, let me jump in real quick there. I just want to ask Adon one last thing. So, Adon, when you first were starting off with the Lords and Heroes podcast, you actually came out to one of the smaller events that I ran at, I think it was Game Castle in Santa Clara.
Yeah, right.
And that was a small event. I think it was like 1,200 points, 1,250. I forget the details. Right. That was last year.
And you obliterated me with your rats. And then we talked about it.
Yeah.
And we talked about it afterwards.
Anyways, so have you since then, have you actually got in some 2,000 points of Age of Sigmar games? Or have you been able to play any of the larger games yet? And
I really haven't done anything that's really large like that yet. I've been playing, you know, most of the time it's been about 1,000 points. I've done a lot of skirmish. Warhammer Underworlds kicked off, and I got pretty heavy into that. I've run a whole bunch of Underworlds events at some of the local stores, Black Diamond Games in particular. And also been playing Blitz Bowl, which is the Barnes & Noble box set. What a great little game. Holy crap.
What is that? I have no idea.
Blitz Bowl is kind of a streamlined version of Blood Bowl. And, you know, it's set in the fantasy universe. I use a High Elves team, and it comes with orcs and humans in the Blitz Bowl box. And you buy it. It's only available at Barnes & Noble.
Is it Games Workshop?
And it's a Games Workshop game. Yeah, it's the streamlined version of Blood Bowl. And it flows really nicely. It's a lot less complicated than Blood Bowl, I think. And I really didn't have much of an interest in Blood Bowl in the past, but Blitz Bowl is just a blast. And between that and Underworlds and Age of Sigmar Skirmish and stuff, I really haven't gotten much larger games. And also, this whole move thing has just totally messed me up. Yeah, I mean, I have 700 points of my witches in my brother's garage, and the other models that I have are in Arizona, and my Daughters of Cain battle tome is in my car. And
of course.
It's just a mess.
Now, being a little bit more of a celebrity, a known figure, as it were, in the gaming community, hey, come on, as it were. And now you're moving to a new area. Yeah. I mean, did you have folks like reaching out to you in the new area and say, hey, Adon, come hang out with us now that you're in our area, we want you? Or did you kind of have to find groups yourself? Like, how did that go? What is it like as an adult gamer, right, moving to a new area and finding new people?
Yeah, it's interesting. I did post something up in the gaming group, the Facebook group, and said, hey, you know, who's in the Phoenix area? And I connected with a guy by the name of Tyler Lee, who runs a bunch of stuff at Desert Sky Games there in Chandler, Arizona. And so I was able to kind of join their little Facebook group and see what they've got going. They do a lot of, you know, practicing for BAO and practicing for LVO kind of gaming, which is a little different than what mm-hmm. I'm used to. But Tyler's really interested in doing some more narrative stuff and more, you know, inclusive. I don't want to say inclusive, but, you know, less heavy duty competitive and broader based stuff, I guess. And then in the middle of all that, Games Workshop announced that they're opening a Warhammer store in Chandler. And so two weekends ago, about 15 minutes from my new place, they opened a Warhammer store. And so I actually stopped in there about a week and a half ago and met the owner, the manager there. And bought one of those Funko Pop Blood Angels, and so talked to him a little bit about what they're running and how it's going there. And so, yeah, I haven't fully moved there yet, so I don't really know exactly what the scene's going to look like. But I'm pretty encouraged by what seems to be happening there. They have an Arizona Age of Sigmar Facebook group that's super active, so it had
that's always a good
sign. The portents are good. The portents are not maligned. They're very
they're polished. Good. They're great.
They are aligned, not maligned. Right.
Perfect. Oh, well, great. I'm glad to hear that. You know, everything's going well. And you know, when we do take a look at your experience with gaming, I know that, you know, we all know that you have the Daughters of Cain, and we definitely know that you've had some particular look at certain units, other units you've been, you know, you haven't want to build, like Marathi. Are there any other units that you really like in particular that you love just playing with, or even, you know, units that you love playing against? You know, do you like to you know, take the heads of every Stormcast model you see, or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, within the Daughters of Cain, what drew me to it was Medusa, all the Melusai and Marathi, the whole concept of they all have a little bit of her blood, and so they come out with the kind of the snake features that she gained from the belly of Slaanesh and all that stuff. It's all kind of cool. But, you know, of course, everybody is heavy into big blocks of witch elves because they're just so choppy. And you know, I have
trauma from them.
So, but actually one of the units I really love using on the table are the Javelin Fly Girls. I mean, the heart renders they're pretty cool. And the fact that the way that you can, you know, move and shoot with them the you know, rebounding shields and things like that, they can kind of catch people off guard, and it's nice to be able to drop them in and kind of do some hunting, character hunting and things like that with them. And so those are kind of fun. I've not had a lot of success with warlocks. But I like the idea of a highly mobile magic unit. So the idea, the concept I like, but I haven't been able to be very effective with them yet.
I'm not real familiar with a warlock unit. I don't think I've seen them. Tell me, what do they do? What on the board? What makes them so exciting?
Well, they're the only males in the army, but they are, the unit is a magic unit. They cast spells, and they are mounted on.
Is it a multi-model?
It's either 5 or 10 dudes, and they're super mobile because they're on horses. But I haven't figured out a way to really, you know, make them super effective. I don't see them on the board a lot in people's armies, but I think that's just because people are trying to max out on witch hags and you know witches brews and choppy witch elves. So that could be why you don't see them very much. But I'm going to keep playing around with those guys. I got 10 of them, so I either run them as 10 or 2 units of 5 and see how I can get those guys to go. In terms of who I like to play against, I kind of like seeing the newer armies like the Idaneth Deepkin, just because it's something new and different. And I really enjoyed watching the LVO final. I got a really awesome opportunity. The guys from Life After the Cover Save were asked to do the broadcasting for Age of Sigmar at LVO. And they...
Oh, nice. Like the shoutcast, as it
were. Yeah. So what was really cool is that they asked if I would help them out with doing kind of like the play-by-play color commentary on the Age of Sigmar games, because GW Prime was doing the 40K tables and they didn't bring 2 setups. So we were doing the Age of Sigmar tables. So I get to do on the Saturday, we did a couple of showcase games. One guy had that big Forge World Chaos Dragon, so we featured that one. And then we featured 2 armies that were in the running for best painted in another game. And then on the last day, we did all the top table games. And so that was really cool to see kind of there was 2 different Idaneth Deepkin armies that were slightly different builds, but pretty awesome.
One of those was one of the hosts of this show who's not able to be here tonight.
Right. Yeah. So those really awesome builds, really cool seeing how they played on the table, because I hadn't seen them in that super competitive setup. And they were going against this Stormcast player who had won the last 2 years at LVO. And then the last game was Flesh Eater Quartz out of the blue. I mean, Bill came in with this army that everybody said, oh, this army's crap, we're waiting for the new book. And then he comes to the top table and wins it. And as a broadcaster, watching it go and watching him kind of play out the game, it was really interesting. I had not seen that army very often at all on the table because everybody just had dismissed it. And so just see it run and run well and be able to kind of take apart that Stormcast army was very interesting. Now, I have to give props to the Stormcast player because there was a couple times where I was like, oh, he's done. And he came barreling back. And it was still really close at the very end.
It's always amazing to watch top players like that. You know, they're never out until it's actually over, right? And even like you said with Bill there, sometimes it is the player.
Oh, yeah.
You know, sometimes you can give a crap army to an amazing player and you see that isn't maybe a crap army. It just takes a little more finesse to play.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a finesse army and he was definitely using it. He had definitely been thinking about how to run it. And so his strategies were really, really good, really on point.
Yeah. Those games were brutal, you know, just being able to see, like you said, it was right before the Flesh Eater Quartz had that battle tome. And I remember even seeing that list myself and going like, hey, like, seems kind of like he's going to have an uphill fight here. And lo and behold, you know, he won it all.
Who knew summoning about 1,000 points of free models during the game was a good tactics for winning an objective mission.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he recognized the opportunity and he exploited it. That's what good players do in a competitive setting.
Oh, it's not taking away from Bill at all. I played his list at LVO. It's a very good list, well piloted by Bill. If it wasn't for Bill, I don't think anybody else would have basically done as well with him a little bit, basically.
Yeah. It's also interesting.
Well, that's a big part of.
No, I was just going to say, it's also interesting from doing the broadcasting of the games. I'd never really done that before, kind of the NFL Monday Night Football style broadcasting. You get to see a bunch of stuff and you realize, you know, even the very top players make mistakes. You know, there's rules they don't understand correctly, or there's rules that they totally just miss. You know, they forget to do stuff and the more tired you get and the more pressure you get, sometimes the harder it gets. Because people will go back, oh, he messed that up, and oh, he messed that up. But I never really got a sense, other than one time, where I really thought it was intentional. It really, you know, it's just that you're human beings with thousands of moving parts, stress, and lack of sleep, and it's interesting.
It is. And, you know, it's funny, as a guy who runs a lot of events, I'm sure when you're running those events, as do I, you see a lot of things on the tabletop, too. You know, you don't want to interfere with games, but by gosh, all those little details, just as you saw while you were casting that event as well. Right. You know, I mean, it's the things I notice are, you know, does an opponent point out to somebody when they forgot to re-roll a dice?
Oh, they won't do that.
You know, those little
they don't do that. At least not.
Yeah, I mean, you don't often see that on the top tables, but I will say that below the top table, you
see that. Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, no, I would do stuff like that. Say, hey, are you sure you don't want to make that charge right there? You know, because people would just, well, they miss models, right? And we've all had that experience where you go to put back the terrain, and you've got a dude sitting in the terrain you didn't even forget.
Yeah, there, I mean, you know, there's a big difference between saying, hey, are you sure you're not going to charge that unit? And you know, saying, you know, at the very end of the turn or in the battle shock phase, like, hey, just like FYI, that 30-man witch unit is in coherency. So you want to just nudge that witch back? You know,
that I should clarify. Right. Like, yeah, I feel like, yes, that is true. But like in most etiquette for top tables, players will ask their opponent if their intentions are to do certain things. So there's no misunderstanding on the road, because that is a big problem at like top tables usually.
I think the term we're looking for is getting tonied.
Well, you know, I used to, when I was playing a lot of events, in the more competitive stuff, I would say very clearly, I would say, hey, I'm moving this here. My intention is that I'm outside of 24 inches.
Oh, right. Like that is super important. Yeah. Declaring intent. I am intending to be exactly within 3 inches of this, or I am intending to be slightly without, because inevitably the table gets bumped or there's a parallax issues, the angle you're measuring it from. Yeah. It looks different from a different angle. So and words and communication make all things clear.
And always
clear.
Feel what free to invite concept, your opponent to measure or whatever clarified.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's the game's still a social contract. Like, you'll get some people, especially on top tables, who are like, uh-huh, that's great. And then they'll go in their turn and be like, oh, turns out you're not that far away. And and if it's not recorded. Yeah.
That's wrong. Yeah, I mean, I had one of the times, one of my last hyper-competitive events, I was, you know, I said, hey, okay, so we agreed this guy's out of range. He just looked at me and goes, I guess we'll see.
Oh, no.
Wow. Wow.
And I said, you know what? You're right. You win. And I picked up all my models. I said, I'm done. He was like, no, wait. It's like, no, I'm sorry. I'm not down with that. And I left. I left the tournament. I was like, screw that. I don't need that kind of attitude. It's like, seriously? Oh, and I can't do the visual, but he like put his hand down, his chin down on his crossed hands. Said, well, I guess we'll see.
Oh, like a little coquette, huh?
I hope you were.
Yeah.
It's funny, I've actually ended games on almost similar types of things where somebody just does one of those things and it's like, you know what? I'm not mad right now, but if I continue playing, I'll probably get mad. So let's just end the game now. I'm still happy.
Yeah.
You're whatever.
Yeah. Jeremy,
I'm
going to
go away.
Jeremy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've got a medical helicopter flying around my house. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't taking over the podcast. But sorry.
Did someone call them over because you were kicking the dog earlier?
By the way, PETA, I love my dogs. No dogs were harmed in this recording. I just, you know, I don't want people to think like this is a thing that happens traditionally and it happens very rarely. No. But when it, I just want you to know. Always stay intent, and very if rare. Somebody pulls that on you, you can reach me on our Facebook group, and I'll go punch them in the dick. All right,
okay. All of our listeners, be aware. We now have a, let's call it a competitive etiquette police in the form of Jeremy Vestier. He will dick punch your opponent if you send an application or shoot us a message or a comment.
Yeah, I have to say, mostly, you know, I've played it. At Celesticon and KublaCon and DundraCon, a lot of different events. And for the most part, 99.9% of the time, great folks, really good experiences. I mean, they play hard, but you know, it's not an evil thing. And it's just this once in a while you get that person who just has to be in that zone. And you kind of say, you know what? I don't have to deal with that, but it's very rare in my experience. especially since I'm usually on the bottom losers bracket, and we're usually ranked by that point, so it's all good.
Yeah.
That's what I say. After the second game, it's all fun, right? You're playing against the people that you should be playing, usually people with a similar experience and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Adam, oh my God, I hope I'm pronouncing that name right every time. sorry. I was going to mention, have you tried the Doom, the Warlock Battalion, by the way, for your Daughters of Cain?
No, the Battalion. I have not tried the Battalion. I'm trying to, I haven't used any of the Battalions really. I bought enough models that I could do that combined Stormcast Battalion.
The Shadowhand.
But I haven't run it yet, and that's the only battalion I'm actually interested in running. I was going to run the Temple Nest, but everything I read about it says it's not worth the points. So I probably won't be running that battalion either. No, the Doomfire Warlocks, I try to use them as a harassing unit and put them someplace where somebody, they have to deal with them because they're so fast and they do sling a little bit of magic. And I use them and the Heartrenders to kind of hunt characters and to force my opponent to kind of protect the characters. And so the characters can't do their little bubble stuff.
I mean, the Battalion makes them like kind of like the Canaries in terms where you can just basically, control objectives and the flow of like, you have a lot of board control of that Battalion. Like it's the same thing Canaries give you.
Right.
But if you want to run Warlocks, that's kind of a good way to make them like secondary function, which is just like, basically board control.
But they're so pricey points-wise, though. I don't know if
it's one of those units. I hope in the next general handbooks, when they address the Hag Queen, they drop like the points of that unit as well, because it's one of those things that needs to get adjusted. But
agreed.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to talk about, especially when we look at competitive play, and you just happen to play one of the most competitive armies. I mean, we were just talking at the start of the recording, or just before recording today, that your army, Daughters of Cain, actually won Bobo. So, which is, for our listeners who are not aware, it's across the pond in the UK. It's a 200-player event, or just about 200-player event, and Daughters of Cain did win it. There's a lot of synergy involved. There's a lot of very powerful mechanics involved in Daughters of Cain. They're not, relevant in particular to one or more heroes. Really, just the units themselves are very solid and buffed even further by, a Hag Queen, a Cauldron, etc. What is your number one favorite unit in a Daughters of Cain army?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, in terms of the way they look, I like the Melusai. In terms of the way they play, it's probably going to be the double knife witch elves. I mean, it's a pretty bog standard unit to take in that army, but it's just so good. It's so good, So it's kind of hard to get around it. I like all the units, and there's nothing in that book I don't like. Except maybe the avatar on the wagon. I don't know. It just feels tacked on to me for some reason. But I do run the cauldron with the Medusa on it. It's a nice little unit there. I'm trying to convert one. I'm trying to do a conversion of one of the Idenith Deepkin ships and make that into my cauldron because I want to do an allies thing with the Daughters of Cain and the Idenith and paint the daughters to look like they're coming out of the water.
That's awesome.
That is pretty cool. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if there's any synergy between the two different elves, but my hope is that they're going to bring back the high elves as kind of sky elves with eagles and stuff, because that's what they've kind of kept is the eagle piece. And so you are going to have sea, land, and sky.
That's a good point. Elves. Wow.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
I hope.
I like that too. Now, I'm interested when you said the witch elves. You like the ones with the two daggers, huh? Not into the shields, the bucklers there, reflecting back the mortal wounds and such.
Yeah, I like being able to go in like a freaking blender,
chop chop,
and chop chop, and you got the character there with the drinking a brewski and having them just go nuts. And so that when I read that, I was like, oh yeah, I really like this. And then now when I see online, it was like, oh, you got to have the shields. You got to have the bucklers. Mm-hmm. You got to have the bucklers. And I'm like, oh damn, I've got like 90 good girls thing. Without
you with can have double both. Knives. But. You can have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back to painted figs and have them do a bunch of girls with bucklers now.
Or just get bucklers and glue them on the arms with knives.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that was exciting.
I mentioned if you ever get back into, some of the more meta, hyper-competitive games, you'll find that the Sisters Slaughters are probably very, very good as well because they play to the act. You know, what we call now, I guess, in the community, the activation war.
Oh, the great activation war of 2019.
Yeah, now you're talking about the girls with the whips.
Yeah.
I haven't really played with them much. I mean, I read about them, but I don't actually have any units of those built. I have all witches, warlocks, and the wagons and the snake girls.
Nice. So you're going to actually do your Marathi? You're going to paint her, or are you going to send that out to a commission job? And if you're going to commission it, you got any ideas what kind of paint job you're going to have done on it?
Yeah, well, you know, I have to say, you know, I'm one of those vegan atheist CrossFit airbrushers. So I'm going to have to probably use the airbrush because I've been to I'm going to my third CK Studios class in July. And if I don't do it via airbrush, I think I'm going to get excommunicated from the community. So I'm probably have to do it myself.
Oh, that's fair. I tell you, every time I go to one of those CK classes, I feel like I level up my hobby skills. They're pretty amazing. Well, what the heck? You actually are recording the other podcast with one of the CK teachers. I mean, Justin. Yeah. He holds the CK classes. He teaches on his own. He has all that. I mean, is he kind of now? Is it when you say, "Hey, Justin, can you give me some advice?" He's like, "Yeah, where's my $20?" Or,
No, we actually have a segment on the show called Kiefer of Secrets. So he actually parses out some of his expertise. Yeah, I mean, that kind of grew up out of our friendship with Kat and Caleb and attending the classes and stuff. And they saw the things that he did, and it kind of was an outgrowth of that. It wasn't really something that he sought out. It just kind of organically developed through the course of their relationship. And it was kind of cool to kind of watch that happening. And it's really neat at the CK classes, especially that 101 class, which is supposed to be like the entry-level class. People who came in like you, John, who already airbrushed, and just was like, holy cow, I can do what? Just totally ramp up their game.
Yeah, that was an amazing experience. Like I said, that's why I've taken two of the classes now, and I've actually done a seminar with them at Nova last or 2 years ago. And I'm looking forward to taking another class. Heck, I might even take one of the ones I've taken already. I'll take it again because there's always more to learn.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I'm going up to the one they're doing in Victoria, Canada, the 102 class where they paint the big orc. It happens to land on my birthday weekend. So my wife and I thought it'd be cool to go to Victoria, British Columbia for a vacation, and I can do some airbrush.
Sounds fun.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's going to be a great time. I mean, I haven't been to any of those types of classes before, but I've seen the products, the end result from primarily John and, you know, his wife, Donna. They both went in with killer job.
Yeah.
You know, they go in with a good amount of experience. They come back with even more. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It really does kind of turbocharge your hobby.
Do they do a gift certificate? Because I hear I have a certain friend on this recording. His birthday is coming up soon. He could definitely use some painting courses.
Alex.
You know, I bet you could message Kat and Caleb, sure. And a gift certificate situation could be set up pretty easily.
Yeah, sure.
We could even do a GoFundMe there.
That would be, yes. Yes, thank you, John. I will do that.
I don't even know what to say. Oh man, I'm hurt. I'm hurt.
Just say thank you. Just say thank you.
You know, the only reason why I've ever gotten any sort of Renaissance man kind of awards, you know, I'm convinced, like SoCal Open, is strictly and exclusively because our good friend Matthew, harshly scores himself on his paint score. So much so that if the self-scored ones, you know, I think at Riptide he might have given himself a low score or even a zero because of just one minor detail when his entire army is gorgeous. So, you know,
it's sounds like we got a bit of the other problem on the other end of the spectrum for you, the buddy.
Yeah, yeah, no, totally. Yeah. Okay, fine. Noted. Noted. This is like confronting one of your friends, and you got to tell him like, "Hey, man, you smell. You gotta like wash up. You gotta do it."
Oh, is that?
Are we having?
It
a hot
sounds like it.
Here?
Honestly, I'm a little hurt, but
yeah,
yeah. It was organic. It happened.
Well, look at it this way: no matter how bad you are, you're better than I am.
Well, so you know, like you said, your experience with the airbrush. Do you have a particular scheme in mind for yourself for your daughters of Cain?
I've been doing a lot of research on sea serpents, or, you know, snakes that live in oceans and in water. And so I've been kind of using those as kind of my guide of where I want to do. I think I'm going to tend towards kind of green and yellow with a little red kind of running through it is kind of what I'm thinking about. I kind of goofed around with my Medusa with kind of that little bit of the scheme because I did a real quick kind of three color thing on her just so I could play some skirmish games with her, but I need to ramp her up a little bit and I might use that as kind of the basis of the
overall.
You're
going to be a happy
look.
Camper when the Warcry box comes out and you have that faction that's all the snake people or the snake faction.
Yeah. Yeah. That really looks cool, that group. I mean, they're chaos, right? I mean, they're not really
No.
Canines.
I mean,
canines
is chaos, right?
Yeah. It is not. You are wrong, sir.
Yeah, I was going to say, they worship Cain.
They are an order army. They are an order army. We are the forces of order.
I think that was just marketing.
They're the what happens when you pop a ward off Solantia's back. That's what they are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's when Solnesh has too much beer hammer. That's what happens.
Oh, man. We're going to have to ask Michael about that one.
Yeah, I did beer hammer one time at LVO. I will never do that again.
It's a fun time.
Oh wow, yeah, I've certainly walked past the beer hammer. As much as I enjoy a drink now and then, I am nowhere up to the caliber it takes to play.
I was
in a
so
beer
sick
hammer event
that night and the next morning it was ridiculous.
The LVO beer hammer in particular. You know, a little bit of a side story. My our friend Willow and fellow.
Oh yeah, I was there.
You were there when it happened. Yes. For those listeners out there, there was a rule where when you finished your drinks, you could essentially do special abilities and special attacks because of your drink the moment you finished it. So she downed, I think, like three shots or three beers almost immediately. And while her opponent was deploying, she was immediately just hitting them with extra attacks.
Yeah. And she kind of paid for
that. I'm sure she did.
Yeah. Cannot confirm or deny that she may or may not have been had to be carried from the room.
I think that was the year she won the award for Wanker best
wasted.
White girl drum.
That's exactly right. Wait. Yes.
Did she?
White girl wasted.
I won the
it.
Award for worst Space Marine Army.
Perfect.
Worst Space Marine Army. I love it.
What?
Yes. Yes. Because they were not happy. My travel army is all bikes and thunderfire cannons. Yes, I thought
that's
so. I thought
awesome.
You would
that was
love
like
it.
Fifth end right there.
Yeah.
Yes.
And well, I did it because I could fit an entire army in one KR case. So
pragmatic.
Yeah, and I think this was right before the switch to 8th ed.
Oh yeah.
Is when that happened. Yeah.
See, there's a magic that you've hit on there. I mean, that's what I took to Cruise Hammer was my bike army, too. Not because it did good, but because I could pack
right?
it into a
exactly.
single KR box.
Yeah, you get the bikes and three Thunderfire cannons. and it all fits.
Well, yeah, Adon, do you have any final thoughts to share with us about Age of Sigmar before we head on out? And as a secondary question, do you have anything you'd like to promote?
Yeah, I'm really excited to continue with the Age of Sigmar journey. And for folks who are still nerd raging over the loss of Warhammer Fantasy, it's time to put that behind you and embrace the glory of Sigmar and come back to Sigmar 2.0. And I think this is a great time to be playing GW games. They're really firing all cylinders in terms of the feedback they're getting from people and the things they're trying to do. And is it perfect? No. But are they trying really hard? Yeah. And that's what you want. You want that. You want the company to be trying and trying to do their best. And I think that no one can argue that, you know, they may not agree with how they are doing things in terms of the rule changes they make or whatever, but you can't argue that they aren't listening and they aren't trying to make things better as they go. And so I give them a lot of props for that. And as for the second thing, so Lords and Heroes, a gamer's journey through the mortal realms and the detours that happen along the way, is a monthly podcast that I run, available on most podcast platforms. And my most common co-host is Justin Kiefer of the Independent Characters and CK Studios. And the Independent Characters is a 40K podcast that I frequently guest host on. It's run by Carl Tuttle. You want to talk about celebrities and icons in the hobby. There's a true official Games Workshop designated Warhammer hero. He's got the medal and everything. I've seen it. And so that's also another great show for folks who are into the real positive and kind of let's go have some fun kind of 40K discussions. So there
great.
You go.
Well, again, Adon, thank you so much for spending time with us today, especially since we are unworthy. But
this has been a lot of fun.
And we'd love to have you again. For all of our listeners out there, you can reach us on Apple Podcasts, Facebook, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to like, subscribe, and rate us if you feel the need to do so. We'll be touching base with you guys next week. This is Alex, Adon, John, and Jeremy signing off.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all the time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.